A hallmark of democracy is under threat around the world.
Without facts, we cannot fight mis and disinformation. Without accountability, we will not have strong policies in place. Without press freedom, we won't have any freedom.
The strategies for silencing free speech.
It is a key tool in the authoritarian playbook to jail writers, and that is increasing.
And it's been a trial by fire for student journalists covering massive demonstrations on their own campuses. Today is Saturday, May 3rd. Join us as we explore the issues in the news. Hi there, I'm Lori London in Washington. Threats to silence free speech and information are reported to be under attack in every corner of the globe, with 2023 turning out to be one of the deadliest years for journalists in recent memory.
Around the world, media workers are risking their lives trying to bring us news on everything from war to democracy. I'm shocked and appalled by the high number of journalists killed in Israeli military operations in Gaza.
Marking this week's World Press Freedom Day, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres urged all nations to find the political will to defend a free press.
Without facts, we cannot fight mis and disinformation. Without accountability, we will not have strong policies in place. Without press freedom, we won't have any freedom. A free press is not a choice, but a necessity.
The latest global press freedom rankings from media watchdog Reporters Without Borders, or RSF, presents a discouraging picture. Afghanistan, Argentina, and even the U.S. are among the countries to fall in the rankings. Christina Casado-Smith has more on the findings.
U.S. President Joe Biden was direct in his message late last month to Russian President Vladimir Putin about the country's detention of two American journalists, Ivan Gorshkovich and Altsu Kurmasheva.
Journalism is clearly not a crime, not here, not there, not anywhere in the world.
But as the cases of Gorshkovich and Kurmasheva show, media are at risk. Media watchdog Reporters Without Borders echoes this sentiment in its newly released 2024 Press Freedom Index, which finds that threats from governments are the biggest challenge to journalism. Moscow's tight grip on media since its invasion of Ukraine keeps Russia low on the index. Censorship and threats of legal action have prompted the exile of more than 1,500 of its journalists since February 24, 2022, according to Reporters Without Borders, or RSF. Clayton Wimmers is the executive director of the U.S. Office for Reporters Without Borders.
The free press is a thing of the past in Russia. It is virtually impossible to operate openly as an independent journalist in Russia.
At the Washington National Press Club, President Emily Wilkins says the rising risk should be a concern to everyone.
We have seen journalists being murdered for their work in previous years. We've seen a number of other harassments, threats made to reporters. And so I think on the whole, there is a rising concern about press freedom, both in the U.S. and abroad.
In the U.S., a police raid of a Kansas newsroom, hostile rhetoric and arrest of journalists covering protests led to the country's dropping 10 places in the 2024 index. Again, Wimmers.
There seems to be this growing culture of acceptability or permissibility towards attacking the media. And we see it especially at the local level. We see local politicians railing against their local newsrooms and their local journalists. We see local law enforcement carrying out pretty shocking actions against local reporters.
Argentina, Peru, and El Salvador also saw declines. In those countries, says RSF, political pressure and an environment hostile to journalists are common. Afghanistan fell 26 places to the third worst in the world for press freedom. Taliban directives on media and women make it increasingly hard to work there, say journalists. Afghan journalist Farag Tarin lives in exile. She says that censorship has reached its peak and that media are under censorship. Journalists cannot tell the truth about what is happening and the media are in a critical situation. China, too, remains near the bottom. and its influence is spreading, says RSF. In Hong Kong, pro-democracy publisher Jimmy Lai is on trial under the national security law introduced by Beijing. He faces life in prison if convicted.
We're very concerned that China is setting itself up as an export model for anti-democratic values that clamp down on press freedom and freedom of speech.
With dozens of countries due to hold elections this year, RSF says the decline in political actors coming to the defense of press freedom is a troubling trend. Even Norway and Ireland, which have historically good records, saw a drop in the rankings. Cristina Caicedo-Smith, VOA News.
RSF was also sharply critical of Israel, downgrading it from a problematic country to a difficult one for press freedom. In early April, the group also issued a statement calling for international pressure on Israel to stop the, quote, massacre in Gaza of Palestinian journalists. My colleague Michael Lippin sat down this week with RSF USA Executive Director Clayton Weimers and asked why he believes the United States and Israel's other Western allies haven't used the same strong language as RSF on this very issue.
You know, that's a great question, and it's one I ask myself. I've been in countless meetings with officials from the United States government, pleading with them to take a harder line with Israel because the level of killing that we're seeing in this war is devastating. We have not seen so many journalists killed in a conflict in such a short period of time in modern history. The numbers are simply jaw-dropping, and it reflects, on the one hand, just a culture of total disregard for the safety of journalists in the field, and on the other hand, a culture that seems to be permitting the targeting of journalists. We have documented a number of cases where we have to conclude that the journalists were the targets of airstrikes or of Israeli fire because there's no other way that they could have come under attack.
RSF has said that more than 100 Palestinian journalists have been killed since the start of the conflict. And when you have your conversations with the Biden administration, when RSF tries to share these findings also with other Western governments that have sway with Israel, Israel can point to, you know, evidence that it says it has, that most of these Palestinians who are identified as slain journalists are also members of terror groups involved in their media wings or their military units. And I wanted to know, how does RSF respond to Israel challenging your definition of who constitutes a journalist?
Well, frankly, it's offensive. We take great care investigating each and every case. We do not count anyone who we reasonably think could be considered a Hamas militant among the journalists that we have counted as casualties of this war. You know, the great care that we take is actually one of the reasons that sometimes you might see differing numbers out there from other groups that might count or other governments that may be counting, because we want to be 100% certain that everyone that goes onto our list of killed journalists definitely was a journalist. And in fact, we go a step further and we count specifically the number of journalists who we can demonstrate were killed in the course of their work as journalists. And they find themselves targeted by IDF airstrikes and snipers and machine gun fire. And, you know, we simply can't accept the word of a government that has demonstrated a total lack of remorse for killing these journalists. And it, by the way, it did not start on October 7th. Israel has had a very poor record on protecting journalists' safety in Gaza and the occupied West Bank going back years. And some viewers may be familiar with the case of Shireen Abu Akleh, for example, the Palestinian-American journalist who was shot in the head by an Israeli sniper in a case that was extremely brazen. So this is not a new problem, but the scale is definitely new.
One more question on this issue, and that is, how persuaded is RSF when the Israeli military makes statements like it has, you know, over the course of this conflict, that the Israel Defense Forces have never and will never deliberately target journalists?
If that were the case, I think we'd be seeing very different results in this war, frankly. And whether or not it's the case that they're deliberately targeting journalists, it is still a war crime to indiscriminately fire into civilians. And if you are indiscriminately killing journalists, you are just as liable. So I think you just have to look at the results to know how much stock to put in statements like that.
The RSF report on this conflict does single Israel out for criticism. I didn't see any reference to Hamas's conduct in this conflict, and I wanted to know, is there anything you can share about how the Hamas terror group and other groups designated by the U.S. as terror organizations use traditional and social media to put out their own messaging? And also, how do they treat independent journalists who are working in areas that they control?
You know, press freedom has always been tricky in the Palestinian territories, and there has been a tendency towards propagandistic content being distributed. One problem that we're seeing, though, is that the lack of independent media in place to cover this war is allowing propaganda to really thrive on all sides. And so the access of international media to Gaza is paramount. Right now, everything that we know that's going on in the war from an independent journalist is coming from a Gazan journalist. This is a point that we make to the Israeli government quite frequently is, you know, they complain a lot that a lot of the information out there comes from, say, the Hamas health ministry when it comes to citing a death toll. Well, if you allow the international media in to verify some of these claims, then you won't allow potential propaganda to thrive. Yet, our calls have gone unheeded. The Israeli border authorities will not let international media access Gaza. There have been a few instances where international journalists have been permitted to accompany IDF soldiers, which is valuable, but it can't be all of the coverage because that's necessarily a very shaded view of the conflict. Other than that, I'm only aware of one instance where a journalist was able to get in. That's Clarissa Ward was able to spend a little bit of time in Gaza, but even then she had to use every trick in the book to get in.
Clayton Weimers, Executive Director of RSF USA, thank you so much for coming in to VOA.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
A separate index released this week by PEN America also shows a sharp spike in the number of writers jailed for expressing their views. Joining me to talk more about it is Karin Deutsch-Karlikar, PEN America's Director of Writers at Risk. Thanks so much for being with us. What can you tell us about your just-released Freedom to Write Index 2023?
So PEN America's Freedom to Write Index basically looks at writers who have been jailed in the previous calendar year. It's the fifth year we've produced the index. And what we have found is that there has been a consistent rise in the numbers of writers being jailed around the world. So we're at a five-year high. The number this year was 339 writers behind bars. And we are seeing, as I said, a consistent trend with more and more writers being jailed. PEN looks at writers who write on all genres and on all platforms. So we look at literary and creative writing, poetry, people who write essays, nonfiction, or research, and then also opinion and analysis articles. The medium can be books, it can be, you know, Twitter, it can be Facebook, it can be really a wide range of mediums. But what we really look at is people who write on a consistent basis and looking at news and opinion writing.
So basically, what you're saying is that in the past 5 years, the suppression of creative thinkers and opinionators and writers and overall people in creative communities have been facing more and more suppression around the world?
Yes, definitely. And I would say, you know, a large proportion of these writers are expressing, you know, dissent of some kind. So that could be dissent against their ruling government. It could be against political authorities or decision makers. It could be against different social customs or traditions. But what we do see is sort of pushing back against the boundaries, trying to interrogate, you know, the current leadership. You know, many of these writers are trying to sort of push or imagine, you know, new worlds with different, you know, circumstances. But we do see a consistent trend, I would say, of writers sort of pushing back against the current norms and expressing dissent. And that's really what gets them into trouble. We also have seen, I would say, a consistent trend in a growth of people being prosecuted or persecuted for online expression. So these would be people that are expressing their thoughts and writings online, and that authorities seem particularly interested in cracking down on dissent on online platforms as well.
It seems like authoritarian regimes are sort of gaining ground around the world, and freedom of speech would be one thing that they would be looking to.
Yeah, no, it's a lead indicator. I mean, what we do see is that writers and those expressing dissent are, you know, in the forefront of crackdowns on political rights and, you know, democratic rights more broadly. So it is something that concerns us, because every time a writer is jailed, it sends a signal to the broader society at large large that dissent would not be tolerated. And so it encourages self-censorship, it shuts down debate, it shuts down discussion. And so we do see that it, you know, apart from like a single case of a writer being jailed, it has a much broader societal impact and ramification. There are a couple of countries that have been in our top 10 list for the last 5 years. So China has been in the number one spot consistently. The numbers continue to go up. It's now above 100 writers in jail in China, but China has always been in the number one spot. Iran has really jumped up after the protests that started in late 2022 and is in the second spot worldwide. Again, countries like Vietnam and Saudi Arabia also have consistently been jailing large numbers of writers. But what we saw, particularly last year in 2023, was the impact of war and conflict on free expression and writers in particular. So for the first time last year, we saw both Israel and Russia entering our top 10 list because of sort of increased crackdown on writers and free expression in those two countries.
What about women? Has there been any distinction between men and women? Have women who have been speaking out loudly, particularly in Iran, was that on the radar?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I would say overall, if you look at our global data, you know, many more men who write are jailed than women. And I think this is a symptom both of that there are more men able to write and have that ability to do that for a living than women in general, I mean, in many countries around the world. So I would say overall, with our data, you know, women have comprised about 10 to 15% of our total number of writers jailed every year. So it's a small percentage. But what we have seen over the last 5 years is that the number of female writers jailed has risen from 35 to 51 globally. So it is a significant increase if you look at the five-year trend line. And it's in large part to this, as you alluded, this big crackdown in Iran. There are many women writing and pushing back against sort of gender restrictions in Iran. And there were a large number of women jailed after the protests. A number of them still remain in jail. We see, you know, women like Narges Mohammadi, who won the Nobel Peace Prize last year. She's a key case that Penn has been advocating on. And she writes from jail about, you know, the restrictions on women. But we see there are many other women in Iran who are also pushing back against these boundaries and who are facing the consequences in terms of really major lengthy jail sentences. So Iran is a key, you know, driver of that growth in the number of women being jailed. But we also, for example, last year, there are quite a few new cases from both Russia and Israel of female writers and creative artists who are in jail because of pushing back against the war in Russia and advocating for Palestinian rights in Israel.
So are you saying Israel, which has always been seen as one of the few democracies in that region, is jailing people for free speech within the country?
There are some cases within Israel proper itself. Most of the cases that we've seen last year, actually people were detained or first arrested in the West Bank primarily, and then taken to Israel and jailed within Israel. So they're being jailed by, you know, Israeli authorities, either in the West Bank or in Israel, but Israel is the perpetrator, as we call it, in terms of cracking down on writers and free expression and arresting people and then detaining them. And then many of them are being detained in Israel right now. Israel usually detains people under a form of what's called administrative detention. So they do not need to provide, you know, any charges, any evidence, and they can hold people for periods of at least 6 months and sometimes extend those periods of detention. So most of the cases we see from 2023 occurred in the last few months of the year after the October 7th attacks by Hamas and were focused on arresting people preemptively in many cases for their expression online or because they had a known profile of dissent.
Your report, your index, focuses on freedom to write and writers that have been jailed specifically. Does the report also include journalists?
Yes, definitely. We try to distinguish the Penn report from other excellent reports by the Committee to Protect Journalists and Reporters Without Borders that really focuses on journalists. But our examination of writers does include journalists. We really try to focus in on journalists who do opinion or commentary writing. So they would be considered more sort of editorialists or columnists. And then we also look at cases of journalists where they also, for example, write poetry, write literature, or have significant online commentary as well. So we do include some journalists in our numbers, but it's journalists who engage in opinion or commentary writing.
Do you think the strategy of these authoritarian countries to suppress voices by jailing them is effective for them? Is it suppressing? Is it making people in the writing and creative communities more weary of actually speaking their truth or continuing to voice their views? Do you think it's actually working?
I mean, I do think it works in terms of, in some cases, providing a chilling effect or impacting a much broader swath of people than the actual individuals who are jailed or repressed in certain ways. So it does have a chilling effect. But I think we do see that there is still significant pushback and dissent happening. So there are still many people trying to push push the boundaries in China. There are for sure many, many people trying to push the boundaries in Iran right now in many different ways. You know, that can be anything from writing and the cases that we look at. There's a rapper, a singer right now who's facing the death penalty in Iran, Tumad Salehi, because of his music. So there's still significant pushback, but it is a key tool in the authoritarian playbook to jail writers, and that is increasing. But in certain countries, we do for sure continue to see pushback as well. So that's something that I think at Penn, it gives us hope that, you know, despite these huge pressures on writers who are expressing dissenting viewpoints, people do continue to write, they do continue to try to get their words out. And we consider it our job and our mission to help amplify those voices and to make sure that even if a writer is jailed, that their words do not get constricted, that people are still able to read their writing and that their viewpoints are still able to be heard. We have people like Ilham Toti, who is a Uyghur blogger and academic who is facing a life sentence in prison and has been held incommunicado without any contact with his family for the last several years. And that is because he was writing a blog talking about Uyghur rights and cooperation and intercultural understanding with the Chinese majority. So we see really extreme cases like this where we have, you know, people serving very long sentences of dozens of years. I mean, Narges Mohammadi in Iran is facing, you know, over 30 years on multiple sentences in prison. We have other writers around the world serving very, very long sentences for nothing more than their peaceful expression. And an example in what I would say is a relatively democratic country in India, for example, we had a news editor and public intellectual, a man in elderly years and in poor health, Prabir Purkayasta. He was violently arrested in a raid on his news outlet and was arrested, detained. He's still facing legal charges and has been detained since late last year. And this is in a country that's nominally democratic. So what we see is that these threats can impact people in multiple political environments and can have a very chilling effect on society and the literary, creative, activist communities as a whole. So that is something that all of us really need to fight back about. You know, we need to be speaking out on an individual level. We need to be pressuring our governments to speak out. We need to pressure the UN to speak out. And what we've heard is that, you know, when people are speaking out like this, it does make a difference and it has an impact. A writer in jail sometimes will hear the messages of support and it means the world to people that a government is trying to isolate behind bars. So it is very, very important to keep speaking out whenever we can.
Thank you so much for talking to us about this important report.
It's a pleasure. Always my pleasure.
Karin Deutsch Karlikar, Director of Pen America's Writers at Risk. You're listening to Issues in the News. I'm Lori London. Reporting on our planet has become a risky business. Again, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
UNESCO reports that in the past 15 years, there have been some 750 attacks on journalists and news outlets reporting on environmental issues. And the frequency of such attacks is rising.
This year's theme for World Press Freedom Day was dedicated to the importance of journalism in the context of the global environmental crisis.
It is no surprise that some powerful people, companies, and institutions will stop at nothing to prevent environmental journalists from doing their jobs. Media freedom is under siege, and environmental journalism is an increasingly dangerous profession. Dozens of journalists covering illegal mining, logging, poaching, and other environmental issues have been killed in recent decades.
He says processes are also misused to censor, silence, detain, and harass environmental reporters, while a new era of climate disinformation focuses on undermining proven solutions, including renewable energy. And finally, the debate over free speech exploded in the past few weeks as pro-Palestinian demonstrations spread through universities across the United States. Reporting on the unfolding events on their own campuses also became a training ground for journalism students.
Separating my student identity to my journalism work has definitely been something that I've been thinking about a lot recently. And I think at the moment, I'm definitely just trying to report as accurately and as fairly as I can and place my sentiments about the conflict aside.
21-year-old Columbia University Journalism School student Cecilia Blatto said she's been grappling with complicated editorial issues for the first time.
I think in the past few days, we've really realized the importance of having reliable, accurate and fair coverage of what's happening. And student journalism is very important in this situation.
And that is all the time we have for this week. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thank you so much for listening. For more news throughout the week, listen to International Edition Monday through Friday, or visit us anytime at voanews.com. Join us next week for more issues in the news. Until then, I'm Lori London.